This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So fired up for today. We've got Sonny Dillon. He is the CEO of Dimex Group. Really great conversation we had with Sonny in studio.
That's right. Yeah, it was great having Sonny down to talk about the trajectory of Dimex Group. Basically, he started out as a realtor and moved into development and is now developing, among others, passive houses along both sides of East First and East Van. Born in East Van, building in East Van. This is a really exciting episode.
We also kind of talk about, in addition to just talking about his trajectory, we talk about the trajectory of the market from, you know, kind of the early 2000s kind of on. And it's an interesting perspective about what's been happening in Vancouver over the past two decades or so. And I think people are going to have a lot of takeaways from this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a great episode. It was great having Sonny down to Kokomo Studios. But before we get to that, Adam, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team.
Yeah, Matt. And the big thing here, what's happening is the headline is Brentwood's next wave of project launches. And really what that means right now is we've seen a lot of attention and we've talked a lot about Metrotown and projects in Metrotown. And there seems to be stuff coming.
There's been so many launches in the last 6-8 months, right? It's been, last fall and this spring? I feel like all the talk in Burnaby's Metrotown. Yeah. There was actually only 3 projects that came to market in 2023 in Brentwood.
Right.
So I feel like Brentwood is...
I love Brentwood.
The forgotten stepchild, would you say?
No, come on.
No, but just for new construction.
Sure.
But here's what's going on. There's a renewed optimism. There's a shift back to Brentwood. There's 3 big master plan communities coming that are launching all this year. We got Boffo starting with Bassano.
Yeah.
That's 318 units coming. Grosvenor's got Brentwood Block. That's 451 units. And I think sometime this fall, Bose's Brentwood West is coming. And that's we got 60-story towers we're talking. So there's a lot of new homes coming to Brentwood and a lot of big players too.
Yeah, three great development companies too. So I'm super excited about Brentwood. Think about how dynamic Brentwood is already. And now with new commercial space, new residents, it keeps getting better.
Yeah, the pendulum is swinging back towards Brentwood from Metrotown. If you liked what you heard today, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLACanada.com to subscribe now.
And our podcast is also sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company in Vancouver.
We got a hot new listing.
We do have a hot new listing that we are launching early next week. So this is the first you're going to be hearing about it. It's going to be on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, which is our site where we feature all of our listings. This one's a great one. It's a 1-bed, 1-bath at W1. By Concord Pacific. So this building's a few years old.
Speaking of great spots, down a south end of Cambie there.
Cambie and Marine, really close, obviously, to SkyTrain, shopping, entertainment. Awesome building.
Nice theater down there.
Really nice theater.
Yeah, nice theater.
I've been there.
When was the last time
you've been to the theater? I don't believe it, but... Yeah.
No, the movie theater.
That's why. Yeah, sorry. I thought...
I only go to Shakespeare in the Park. The Bard on the Beach is where I do most of my other theater work.
Anyways, you're distracting. Here's the thing. AC in the unit, 1-bed, 1-bath, really great floor plan, overheight ceilings, awesome view, great outdoor space, really high-end Concord Pacific level finishes.
A phenomenal building.
And full-time concierge. What more can you ask for? That's 1507 433 Southwest Marine, W1, coming to market Tuesday of next week.
What's it being offered at?
You'll have to check VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Adam, while you're there, hit that button, sell with us, because you can download our most downloaded program of all time, The Sold Plan.
I see, because we're joined by Corey from William Wright today, and he's with
taking
us.
Notes.
He was rolling his eyes when he said,
"Oh, I thought
downloaded.
He was taking notes."
Is that was your tagline? The most downloaded.
Well, last time you had me on for your intro outro, you never invited me back. I made the dumb comment of like, "Isn't that the only download you guys have?" And then I got the stare of death. Say, and then you never asked me to come back on.
I can't believe we've got you in here. Actually,
I love. I was gonna say Friday, Corey. You roll up in the white Suburban and. In sweatpants and
woke
a golf
up
shirt.
This morning.
I honestly thought it was Tony Soprano coming out.
Oh,
of the
I was car. Having to go around and collect some rent this morning.
Exactly.
You sent a photo of him walking down the street, though. He did. It was the scariest thing I've seen in a while.
Somebody's missing their kneecaps.
I was taking some shoe sizes there for my friend over for little Tony down there at the cement company for those who don't want to pay their rent on time.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, do we have anything else?
About the SOLD plan.
Oh, yeah, the SOLD plan. Yes, it stands for Start on Launch Date. That's the acronym. This is the step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time for your home. And it's an evergreen document that you can keep that just basically gives instructions on how to get your home ready for market. It is a fantastic download. It's free. It's an instant download. Just head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, click sell with us and sign up for the SOLD plan and you got it.
Yeah. So maybe we'll cut to our talk with Sonny Dillon from Dimex. Great conversation. East Van born and bred.
Yeah. I love this one. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Berquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam. With 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds, Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's SOENHAUS. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Sonny Dillon. He's the CEO of Dimex Group. How you doing, Sonny?
Doing great. Yeah, thanks so much for coming down. Good to have you in the studio. Maybe for our listeners who are not familiar with Dimex Group, although anyone who drives down East First is probably saw the signs.
And the graffiti.
can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and the Dimex Group?
Sure, yeah. So I was born and raised in Vancouver. I started Dimex Group back in 2007 and always had a passion for real estate development. Kind of got into the real estate game as a realtor. I had some family that was doing single family home development and duplexes.
Right.
And they recommended that I get into the real estate industry, and it's something I wanted to do. And I had a lot of uncles that were, single family home builders. And it was just something that I've always wanted to do. So I got into real estate. And from there, of course, my passion was wanting to do development. And so just over time, I kind of dabbled into development and just got into development.
And so you started selling the product, the homes, and correct. Then you got involved in building them. Like, so you were building single family homes and duplexes prior to Dimex Group or?
No. So when I started Dimex Group, I had only built one single family home. From there, during that time, I was in real estate as well. And after I came across, a site and, I figured it was very undervalued and it started there. And it was a 55 unit project.
Wow.
It turned out to be. And so I kind of went from a single family home to a 55 unit condo project.
Wow.
And luckily, so I just, you know, the project was undervalued by a decent number. And I think that's kind of what helped catapult and take me to kind of the next step, which was development and having some good relationships with my friends.
You know, right.
Able to put the, you know, I guess, raise the capital.
Right.
To do the development. And then it was about obviously trying to get financing for this stuff, you know, because I was kind of just grassroots, you know, first development. I built a single family home before that. So it was just one of those things where we were lucky the market was good. And so we had 86% pre-sales. So I guess somebody was willing to take the chance and give me the money to build it out. So
wow. Maybe we should save this for later, but I feel like can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges from going from like zero to 55 units? You know, I guess raising the capital, the financing, but there seems like there's so much to go into that, even pre-selling, the construction. Like, yeah, what were the biggest challenges or thinking back? Surprises maybe in the process?
Oh, I think it's just exponential learning on a lot of fronts. You know, I wasn't a marketing expert. I wasn't an expert in accounting or legal, or there's so many things, like there's so many moving parts. So I guess I had the knack and kind of the energy to want to learn, because it was something I always wanted to do as a, you know, as a dream when I was younger, when I was a kid. And there's a lot of challenges along the way, and kind of learning the construction industry as well, learning, you know, understanding, and I was new to me, like figuring out planning, figuring out construction, finance, all those things are, you know, things that you get, there's no school that you go to.
Yeah, no kidding.
For all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, like it's something you learn through experience.
Did you have like, I know you had family that were building duplexes and single family, but did you have kind of mentors people that you could rely on? Because it, like in my mind, it's such a daunting, like all that. Yeah. Okay. It was in Burnaby, right? This project, but
correct.
Like, okay, dealing with the city of Burnaby, you know, dealing with architects, the financing, like it's just like overwhelming in a lot of ways.
I leaned on, I had a couple of uncles that were already kind of dabbling into multifamily. And I was watching, I was always around them, and I wasn't learning directly, but indirectly, I was hanging around with some of their marketing people, finance people. So I was just picking up while I was a realtor.
Right.
I was picking up on kind of, and that helped me in my real estate career as well, where, you know, I kind of knew how to crunch the numbers on development sites, and I kind of figured out the do's and don'ts, you know, what works, what doesn't work. What am I looking for, you know, for civil issues or whatever they are on the planning side and development side. So that's where I kind of got my first education on, like kind of what mistakes they're making or what things are going well. And then kind of those circles of like the marketing group and legal, and that's kind of where I got my footing. So, you know, because when you're in the industry, the marketing teams, they want to obviously do business, right? And at the same time, you know, you start learning. Mm-hmm. Different aspects of the development game.
What was it like growing up with a family that seemed to all be in various parts of the real estate world? Like, were you talking about development around the table or what?
No, so it wasn't around the table. So my, in our nuclear family, we didn't have anybody that was doing development, but it was my dad's cousins or his friends that were doing development. So it wasn't around the kitchen table.
Right.
But it was, you know, something that I always wanted to get into. And my dad wasn't, you know, they had never really done. They had built a couple of houses, but I was a lot younger. And but later on in life, in my teens and my 20s, nobody was really building around the kitchen table. There was no construction happening.
Right.
But it was, like I was saying earlier, like it was a passion. And I was able to put it to work kind of after I got my real estate license. And one of the interesting things about my real estate license was, you know, I'd have these deals that I had, and the market was hot at the time. And I saw a lot of my other colleagues and friends were, you know, selling these sites, you know, and people were buying these sites off of them because they were good salespeople. And I found with myself, I was very, you know, transparent. I had all the numbers and I knew my numbers were right. And I knew that the other numbers I was looking at, the other sites were all off. And funny enough, you know, long-term, A lot of people got left hanging, holding the bag on some sites that didn't make any sense, but they bought them. On my side, you know, I wasn't a good salesperson. I mean, not single family home stuff was easy at that time because the market was hot, but the development side, it was different because I had all the numbers and every site that I looked at was making sense.
Yeah.
And made money, you know, and I sold some. It wasn't like I didn't sell them, but I realized pretty quickly that, hey, you know what? I need to I need to do this for myself.
Right. Yeah.
Right. With the passion that I have. So, and it wasn't easy because you need investment dollars and big money. It's a big money game. So,
and it sounds like at least with the first project, there was a healthy enough margin that you could even have a few missteps and it would still be a profitable.
For sure. Yeah. And I was lucky because I had a good construction manager that was a good friend of mine. Became a good friend of mine. And he was a younger guy and, you know, he was growing his company as well on the construction management side of things. And we just really gelled well together and we had a focus to get that one project, you know, kind of up and running. And it was going to be, you know, something on his resume and kind of a stepping stone. And it was going to be my stepping stone as well. So it just I think it's a lot of it's like who you meet.
Working with people you can trust.
Yeah.
And where they are in their business too. Cause it's like you're two young guys kind of growing together, right? It creates this kind of unique.
Yeah. I mean, like there were so many hours that we both put into looking for investors or making the numbers work or just there's a lot of effort that went into it. But, you know, you said something. Trust is the main thing. Like it's all about relationships. You know, I always look at it like people either look at perception, you know, perception is a big thing. Like, well, how does it look on the outside? So, but, you know, at the bottom of it all is basically relationships and trust.
And just for context for the listener, what years were we talking about here roughly for when the market was busy and when you bought
2002, like, so market, I think, was super busy, like probably earlier, 2003, 2004,
right
up until the 2008 crash, like, so prior to that. Prior to that, yeah, like 2007. So that's when I acquired my first site was in 2007. And then there was this huge slowdown, but I was in development planning stages anyways during 2008.
Right.
And so we didn't actually have, you know, our disclosure statements and development permit. We got that in 2009. So by that time, market had
kind of come back.
Right. Yeah. It was like a 1 year slowdown, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were pre-sold in 2009.
It's so interesting. We actually pre-sold because the market had, there was some life in the market around end of November 2009. You know, I said to my marketing guys, I was like, you know, should we just go for it? And it was like December. We're going to December. So we launched our grand opening. I remember December 12th. And it was like, they had never done it before around Christmas. And that was a big, big decision for us. Like, do we do it right before Christmas? And we did it. And I think within 60 days, we were like 86% sold out. So, or 3 months. But yeah, it worked out. So it was great.
What about, just thinking about, you know, the market then and just how different it is than the market today. I mean, watching, like, did it feel like when you got into real estate in the early 2000s, like, did you see Vancouver as a huge opportunity with all the changes happening? And with, I mean, at that time, lots of international interests, lots of people wanting, like, it was like continuation of Vancouver being kind of recognized on the global stage, right? And then a lot of lead up, and then 2010, obviously the Olympics. Like, can you talk about that time in real estate?
Personally, I think that, because foreign investment was, I mean, we were getting like it's always been about the same, like 4 to 6% of the buyers are like foreign buyers, but generally they're all local buyers.
Right.
So, but I guess the overall, the rules have changed quite a bit in terms of, like, you know, foreign buyer tax and all that sort of stuff. But the buzz was there back then, other than 2008, you know, kind of the global crisis. But other than that, I mean, the buzz was there in Vancouver and prices were relatively lower, you know, like, 'cause I remember, you know, a few years later, I built, I jumped into a 232 unit project. So I built 55 units and then jumped into 232 units. So it was, again, kind of like exponential. But pricing had gone up. Like, just, I remember from our first phase, which is 100, 11 units, you know, we had sold at $494 square foot average. And that per square foot price, and we were selling in 2019, and that per square foot price on our second phase, which was a year later, was $870 a square foot. So like wow. It just doubled, right? Almost.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think to kind of answer your question, like the period, I think the market did go through a little bit of a lull because it always has its ups and downs. Like I think 2013, 14 were slow. You know, so.
Right. I remember. Yeah.
I think a lot of things are driven by policy for sure. Like I think a lot of it has to do with what's going on with governance.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of the different feels in the city. Like it felt like 2016, 2017 was like, it seemed like it didn't even rain that winter. It was like just always like the buzz. It was like just felt really alive. And it doesn't necessarily feel like that. I'm kind of curious now, like it feels very different, not necessarily bad, but just different for sure. I'm just curious about your thinking of your career. So it's been what, almost 25 years, basically. You know, you talked about the buzz then and the price points being a lot more attractive. Like when you think out the runway right now, and we usually save this for the end, but where do you see like 10 years from now? Do you feel like the city still has the same buzz and a kind of runway of optimism when it comes to real estate?
That's an interesting question because I'm building three projects in Vancouver and having gone through the city process in Vancouver for the last, I'm in it. It's been about 4 years now, 5 years. And it's been a long run, you know, like it's just, I don't know personally if I would build in Vancouver again. You know, I can't just say that I'm never going to do it again, but definitely I think permit processing, and there's a lot of different entities and departments that are, or, you know, that are, they're not talking to each other in terms of flow. Like, so there's a lot of hoops I think a developer needs to jump through things. You take projects from like trying to assemble land, you know, then walking through all the, like, you know, how do the taxes work? How does the subdivision, like the land assembly work? And how do you get taxed by PTT? You know, like there's all these different evaluations and things that take place. And then there's, you know, the BC assessment that happens every year and how does the evaluation of these lands. But, you know, all that, the economics get killed by time, right? Because if there's, nobody has a flow of like, this stuff has to happen within a certain time frame. You need to process your permits, get your, because you can't gauge the market. Right. So how do you gauge a market if you don't have any
certainty around time, right? Yeah.
Around time, yeah.
So we've had a lot of developers on the program say that these development programs have never been, like soup to nuts, have never been as complicated as they are today. Does Sonny Dillon, young Sonny Dillon developing his first project in Burnaby, like does that even, could that exist today? Meaning like it's a very complicated process right now for the development community from like soup to nuts to do these developments. Like, do you see young people getting into development trying to do multifamily? Like, is it a much more challenging time now for someone like yourself 20 years ago?
Much more challenging. Yeah, like the construction requirements are a lot higher. All the building codes are more complex. So it's, and the costs are, there's so many costs involved to that. I think it's very hard to get into development unless you're building out in the outskirts, right?
Right.
Outside of Metro Van or some other markets that are maybe a little bit easier on the construction side, simpler builds. But Vancouver is very tough, I think, to get the construction quality and the requirements are onerous.
And do you see this as an opportunity for the big players to gain more market share?
Possibly, yeah. If sellers realize that they're the only people to sell to or something like that. Yeah, because the numbers are really hard to make. They're very hard to work and make work in Vancouver. Like the construction costs are really high. The requirements are just, they all relate back to cost.
Right.
Right. So, and then time, there's uncertainty on time. You can't make a performa work. It's very tough. So I think like unless you got really deep pockets and you can hold the land and land is appreciating and you're making money there, but you're not making, I don't think you're making money on construction. You're just making money on maybe a land lift, which is hard to do these days.
Yeah. And you got to find the deals, which we got to talk about. But actually, I was just thinking, you know, one of the things about Complicated, you have two projects on First Templeton and Lakewood. And both of them, I believe, are passive hosts.
Correct.
That's- so I think those are the only, you know, you see a couple other passive house, like houses in the neighborhood being built. There's one closer to Hastings for sure that they've been working on for 5 years or whatever that I've walked by. But can you talk a little bit, maybe for listeners who don't know what passive house is, what is it and why did you go in that direction?
Well, I think I was wanting to give our end buyers a better quality building and kind of like, you know, we were wanting to build for the future.
Right.
And build sustainable buildings, do something for the environment. They're very energy efficient, 90% savings in energy costs. But I guess, you know, that balanced with affordability. So, you know, the end user is not going to pay for the difference for the quality of, say, having a passive home versus a regular home. Because, you know, mortgages are, you have big dollar amounts when it comes to mortgages.
Right.
Hard to get approvals for mortgages, income. Like, so, you know, I don't think that the market can afford passive hosts, but they're great, good quality buildings that we're building. But I don't think we're not getting the extra money for those buildings that we're building, but we're at market, but we're building a better quality building. Uh-huh. These buildings last, I would say almost, you know, they're going to last longer than your regular built. And you're getting way better breathing, you know,
right, like
breathing quality,
yeah,
you know, right. Air quality. I think, you know, passive house is, it takes longer, but we've been doing a good job on our schedule. But overall costs are more, I just don't see it being sustainable in the long term where, say, cities want, on one hand, they want passive house or sustainable buildings or really high building codes. But on the other side, that you're trying to house people, yeah, and you need affordability, and you like those things don't go together.
Yeah,
right. They just don't go together. So we're building passive house projects. We're very proud of it, and they're kind of, we call them my construction manager a couple of weeks back said, you know, if all people only knew that we're building Aston Martins and not BMWs, you know,
right, right,
you know, because they don't see the inside walls, they don't see the amount of quality and workmanship that's going into these buildings, like.
Yeah.
Really nice. And I think we are one of the very few at market passive house.
Yeah. Multifamily, right? Like I'm trying to think of.
I know there's one in Coquitlam.
Oh,
Curve is coming. Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a complicated, I mean, in an already complicated development process.
It's another layer.
It's another layer, right?
And if you don't, but so I can understand, if you can't build in that buffer on the price per square foot on the market, right? Can you walk us through kind of the thought process of actually deciding to build passive house?
At the time, because construction costs had gone, so you have to look at inflation, right? So inflation really up, you know, started swinging upwards on mid-2022 onwards.
Yeah, right.
Right. So we, prior to that, I mean, I remember, so I've been in the process, these are zone sites, mm-hmm. and I was in the process for 4.5 years getting permits on a zone site, which should have taken about 2 years. So there's that time loss, right? The extra 2.5 years. So in that 2.5 years, when we got ready to develop or build, the inflation went through the roof and there are supply chain issues and all this. So it was just a perfect storm.
Right.
And so construction costs are already high on a regular build. So they're going to be more complicated and higher on, say, a passive house build.
Right.
Right. So I'm not, you know, passive house is great, but I'm just saying we're talking about our developments and the timing of kind of the market and what's happening in the market, right? So that's the topic, right? Like, so the market, that's what's happened in the market is, you know, interest rates, inflation, and slow permit processing, really slow permit processing. Yeah. So all that stuff adds up.
Kind of a perfect storm.
And so it doesn't make sense to build a higher sustainable building if nobody can afford to buy it and it costs more to build. It doesn't help house people.
Right.
Right.
There seems to be, I mean, at all levels now, a big push towards purpose-built rental. Are you doing any purpose-built rental or do you see a pivot there?
Overall, we're looking at some purpose-built rental out in Coquitlam. But in general, I mean, I think that's where kind of what I've been, you know, the research I'm doing and what I'm hearing is like, and kind of where we want to go is into purpose-built rental. It's kind of our focus.
And there seems to be a lot of people in the development community kind of thinking the same way along purpose-built rental. And hopefully that means it's easier to pencil sites moving forward and proformas are getting easier. But do you see that resulting in fewer opportunities for home ownership?
It's hard for me to say like what the, you know, the percentage of new builds there are going to be versus rental, but I think there's going to be more rental activity. And you're talking about penciling numbers. I mean, you're always going to have to figure out the pro forma to see if it works. But I think what helps is the financing aspect. Like, so if you're able to get like an MLI select, you know, through the CMHC program,
right,
get that program. So your financing is easier. You're not having to rely on sales and you're getting basically, you know, a term buyout after your construction. The rates are good. So there's that helps the numbers as well. And rent rates are pretty good, right? So they, if you get the right land price, it can pencil out pretty good.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
You know, I'm kind of curious, and I may be asking the same question as you, Adam, in a kind of different way, but it's interesting to think that in the last 20, 25 years, very little purpose-built rental has been built, and it's almost all been strata, or the vast majority, as I understand it, has been strata. And now it seems like if this kind of pivot happens where there's going to be a lot of developers building purpose-built rental to kind of catch up, but the pendulum kind of swings, but there's not going to be a lot of strata. It's just interesting to think about housing prices when there's a lot of new supply coming down the line, but not a lot of it's for sale. So it's like, is housing supply is actually not growing at a pace? Like, I wonder what that does with price appreciation, right? Well, if that happens, it's more like theoretical, I guess.
Well, and maybe one market to look at might be like Seattle, right? Because Seattle has a lot of purpose-built rental, like significantly more than Vancouver.
And the rents are lower.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, to your point, I mean, you're right. Yeah. It's interesting because the other thing is like, so I think from what I've read, $2 billion, I think BC Builds had a fund. It's a $2 billion fund for purpose-built rental.
Yeah.
And then I think they got another $2 billion from the federal government. And I think they had another $950 million fund. So, you know, from what I read, you know, that's going to be built by BC Housing in BC.
And, uh-huh.
You know, a lot of those are going to be union jobs. So I got nothing against unions, but so union jobs, BC Housing's building these buildings. And, you know, one of the things that they want is that permitting, they want municipalities to give them preferential treatment in terms of getting permitting done on time.
Right.
So what does that do to everybody else's permits and those at market development permits?
Yeah.
So I feel like the one thing that hasn't changed in the last call it year is there's been a lot of, you know, there's policy changes coming and, you know, the BC legislated policy change, and we'll see what happens on June 30th. But there's a lot of things happening, a lot of changes. But again, it's all slowing down processing, right? So
yeah, like they haven't actually sped up the process, right? Because that was
doesn't feel like it, though. Not at all.
Do you see, is there...
It's slowing it down right now.
Yeah.
Those changes are now, and you can't blame municipalities because now they need to figure out what are these changes. So all the applications that are in, some are on hold or people are holding back or they've been deliberately put on pause by the city. Right. So it's just like all this stuff going on. So no movement.
Yeah. Right? I had this conversation with a commercial broker we work with who does a lot of strata windups. Like that's one of a big component of her business. And she was saying like the misconception right now is like, you know, you've got people in these old 70s buildings that many of them are dying to wind up, but the nobody's buying, right? So then we talked about like the SkyTrain, you know, within being a certain...
all the BC, the provincial rezoning, kind of blanket rezoning near the SkyTrain.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, the misconception is that people just won the lottery because so many developers are going to be... But do you think, like, I guess my question is, do you see like a land rush happening?
No. So there's more options now.
Yeah,
for developers, because there's distress sales. There's people that are looking to sell, and then you got these TOD areas that are basically so. There's more options
mm-hmm.
on the table to buy.
So the goal now is to get land at the best price possible, right? To hopefully offset some of these price increases we've seen across.
Right, and there's current projects that are either stuck. Or looking for partnership or looking to get bailed out. And like, so there's options out there.
Right.
So if that money that was sitting on the sidelines, you know, as the interest rates start to come off and, you know, activities, you know, I think on the buying side, I mean, people are starting to purchase development properties now. So, and, you know, as that ramps up, you know, it's going to change, but people are going to look for good deals. They're not going to just buy, you know, projects like in the past where you're paying top dollar for them.
I was going to say, and it's almost feels like, especially with strata windups, but also assemblies, presumably, like that feels like that's a multi-year reset because everybody remembers their buddy that won the lottery in 2017 or whatever, right? Like, I feel like that's almost 10 years ago now. But it feels like it wasn't that long, especially if you're in a building where you're, you know, you got 45 people that have to agree to wind up and they have these,
or something like that.
Yeah, they have these valuations from 8 years
They're
ago,
expecting
right?
3X or whatever, right? Which is not going to
happen. No.
Can we talk a little bit about
it? Sorry, because people are factoring in construction costs into that too, right?
Yeah.
So that's driving, it's going to drive some, one of the numbers has to come down.
Right. And it's not going to
be soft costs or it's not hard costs.
And it's not, or wages or whatever, right? Yeah,
your sale price has got to go up. I mean, something's got to, or things won't get built.
Yeah. Can we talk? It sounds like, I mean, one of the things, and this is, I'm not saying you weren't a fantastic salesman, but it sounds like what I heard at the beginning was
that was Sunny said that.
Yeah, yeah. Sunny, you say, I'm not saying you weren't
critical.
I'm just saying you basically said, I realized like I was way better at finding and analyzing deals than I was at, you know,
selling lemons.
Exactly. So it's a compliment, but can we talk a little bit?
I'm just saying I'm not a liar.
Can we talk a little bit about what makes a good deal and how you go about finding them?
Yeah. So it's interesting. Good question. Cause I think most of our, you know, the deals that Dimex has had is they've been deals that I found myself or door knocking or talking to people. And, you know, that's always kind of maybe been our,
like your
unique.
Your instead of Achilles heel, it's the opposite of your Achilles heel.
So just for people that don't know how the more typical process works, would a lot of developers have like maybe a broker network that is bringing them deals? Is that typically how it would work?
Like right. A commercial so now, broker? Like as when I was earlier on in my career, I was able to do that on my own. But now in my career, I would just make sure I find the right group of people or realtors or commercial realtors that I can work with and be able to target certain development sites or, you know, maybe something's in the market, but it's an exclusive, you know, you get a chance to crunch your numbers. Like I've never gone into a multiple situation on a development site. To me, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're trying to look for a deal. And especially I think in this market, with all the different topics that we just talked about, you know, you really need to find a site where the sellers are really willing to work with you on time. Right. You know, maybe that's tying your development site to readings, or, you know, you're getting time, but to be able to get through a due diligence period with the city, because you can have a year and a half and still get nowhere with the city.
Yeah.
Or there's a pause, you know, because June 30th, everybody's waiting for June 30th now. So that kills half a year. So, you know, you got the sellers. And I think now sellers are working with potential buyers. So that's the scene is changing.
Right. You've watched this city change so dramatically over the past 25 years, and you've also seen many iterations of the market. What areas are you excited about right now?
Again, interest rate related, but I think industrial, you know, was the it child of real estate. Right. Still is. It's just the interest rates are kind of affecting your cap rates, and they're affecting your lease rates and all that sort of stuff. But I think that'll bounce back as the interest rates come off. And so I would say industrial and rental. And of course, you know, again, it's location, right?
And geographically, where are you excited about?
Personally, I like Coquitlam, Maple Ridge. Like, those are the places that I personally would spend my time.
And when you say spend your time, like, with your family, or you mean like spending your time? Okay. Yes. Okay. No,
spend my time with my family downtown.
Yeah. Interesting. Coquitlam and Maple Ridge. Can you unpack that a little bit? Like, what's exciting about it?
I found Coquitlam to be very developer friendly.
Right.
And I think that there is, you know, there's pockets in Coquitlam where there's opportunities. And I think same with Maple Ridge. It's a growing city. Mm. I mean, there's other cities too, right?
Yeah.
Mission, and I'm sure there's developers that are doing well in certain municipalities, like
sure.
Surrey's not more. So I'll say price point anymore, because I feel like you can pay $2 million for a home here, and you can pay $2 million for a home in Surrey, and rent rates are what? Oh, they're all between $3 to $4 a square foot.
Like, yeah.
So you could pay, I heard somewhere like on, you know, Joy Station, people are paying a little over $5 a square foot for rents, and you're getting that somewhere downtown.
It's like a flattening out of almost everything, right? We've talked about that a lot on the show.
Too. Yeah. Like, it just, I think it's every city has, it's more about niche pockets, you know, like, where are you staying inside that city?
We ask a lot of people this, but less so on the development front and more, we have a lot of kind of mom and pop investors or aspiring investors or people looking to buy real estate. Let's just say you have a niece and she's not related to the rest of your real estate family, and she comes directly to you and says, I got $1 million. Where and what should I buy? What are you telling her?
She has $1 million.
Yeah, let's say.
She's done okay for being a young niece.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I would tell her to go research some municipalities, like, say, Coquitlam.
Yeah.
Right.
Or Coquitlam, or you know, maybe you know, Langley, or some of those municipalities that are you know, where they're growing. You know, I tell her to go buy some land.
Oh,
where,
interesting.
You know,
yeah.
where she's getting a lot of land, where she, you know, she'd have to do her research. Kind of look at zoning and kind of future zoning 5 years out. Yeah, she doesn't need to look 10 years out, but, like, you know, 5 years out, see what, you know, are there new neighborhood concept plans coming? You know, buy yourself, I don't know what $1 million gets you, but say it's an acre site or 2 acre site.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to, you know, if there's something in the OCP, that's going to basically come to fruition a few years down the road. So I think the research would be kind of really figuring out what municipality and neighborhood is going to get there first.
Yeah. So do the legwork.
That's right.
The amount of development coming to Central Coquitlam is astonishing. Like, it's
the new West Coquitlam.
Yeah,
I think like Burke Coquitlam's name is getting changed to West Coquitlam.
We were just talking about this in the office. I don't know if you were there, Adam, but the amenities in Burke Coquitlam, like, the every building is a karaoke golf simulator. Like, it's like something. It's insane what they're doing.
Yeah, they're
like
$1,200 a square foot right now.
Yeah. But, like, the amenities are like, it's like a resort. It's like nice something buildings. You've never seen.
And they're selling, they're doing well on sales.
You know what? A rebrand for Burke Coquitlam makes sense, though.
I think it needs Burke a rebrand. Yeah.
I see in marketing a lot where it's like West Coquitlam.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. That's what I was laughing because
it sounds more expensive.
We're calling it West Coquitlam as well in our office. So,
that's great. So I guess it sounds like you're excited about Coquitlam. It sounds like you're excited about Maple Ridge.
Are there any projects that you're working on that you're excited, really excited about right now?
Currently, we're working on a 35-story tower site in Coquitlam.
Oh, wow.
And a 6-story rental. And there's a play to possibly add to that. And it could end up being 2 towers. And possibly might just be 1 concrete rental building, or maybe it's a long 6-story wood frame, which would make more sense, I think. But yeah, just depends on configuration.
Sonny, like, it strikes me that you've done wood frame in Burnaby, passive house in East Van. It sounds like you may be doing concrete in Coquitlam. Really sounds like you're kind of willing to take anything on and kind of make it work. But do you find process of those three, like, are you working with a lot of the same people, or is it, you know, reset every time and build out the team?
No, generally we're always working with the same people.
Yeah.
But with the tower site, it's obviously we've got new consultants, at some of the same consultants, but generally all the past projects, the wood frame projects, have all been practically the same team. I was talking about relationships at the beginning. Like, you know, it's all, I think at the end of the day, it's all about trust and relationships. So, we've got strong relationships with our consultants, and yeah, that helps the process.
You know, I'm just struck by, like, you live downtown Vancouver. Vancouver, yeah. Downtown's been fairly flat since roughly, called 2017. Do you see an opportunity in downtown right now?
I would say maybe a year ago, year and a half ago, I saw a lot of opportunity when things slowed down.
Yeah.
I haven't been looking lately, so I'm not, you know, maybe it's the same, probably, but there was a lot of opportunity, you know, about a year ago when I was looking.
Yeah. Do you think downtown Vancouver, like, I'm just thinking about it right now, it seems like we're in this moment right now in downtown where there's not as much optimism around the downtown center. Do you see a resurgence of the downtown?
I think, again, it depends on government policies. Influx of money. Foreign money and that sort of stuff. I think that would help the downtown market. But I was going to ask you your question, like, is it for new builds, like resale, or are you talking about pre-sale?
I feel I'm mostly resale.
Yeah, I think there's resale opportunity for sure.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, and I just feel like it's funny that you're asking this question, but I haven't looked in the last little while, but I know when I was looking, there was lots of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But people weren't buying because people were holding back, but there was a lot of opportunity. And I mean, if you want to talk about like West Vancouver and stuff like that, like I think that there's probably some, you know, downtown as well. If the people that are buying like the higher price tag, you know, for sale product, like I think you can get a really good deal if you're buying something really, expensive. So,
yeah. I mean, even West Vancouver I was just looking at the sales ratios and it's like the detached market seems to, North Van's sales ratios are
insane,
like,
yeah.
It's an aggressive seller's market. East Side, it's busy. West Side is even busy. West Vancouver is like a 10% sales ratio, I think, in detached. It seems to me like when I look at like the opportunities, West Vancouver seems like such a great detached opportunity.
But it's been it's been an opportunity for a long time.
So
now,
downtown.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's, I just heard the other day, like I feel like it's in some ways it's getting better. Like I think there was a listing somewhere I saw online where the home was listed for some large number, like 16 million or something like that. I can't remember the exact number, but, and then now it's like listed for 7. So it's like,
wow. A bit of a haircut.
Yeah.
And at the same time, somebody in our office just helped somebody buy a 1-bed. I don't know the project in West Van, but it's $1.5 million for a 1-bed, which is like, who's the market for that? It exists,
downsizes,
I guess. Man. Yeah, I guess
downsizes
so.
Don't want to leave
that are looking for 600 square feet.
That's right.
Yeah. And of course,
no stairs.
Yeah, exactly. No, I guess
that's right. We haven't even talked about the market, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But what are your thoughts on the current market? And maybe, you know, lots of people anticipating a rate cut this year. What are your thoughts?
It's been slow, and I definitely feel like it's with all the buyers that come in, potential buyers that come into our sales centers. I think a lot of it has to do with mortgages and affordability, and I think they're very focused on the rates, and it makes a difference. I mean, your mortgage payment is it's quite big, so I think
it's understandable, right?
1%, it's shaved off by 1%. I think that in itself makes a huge difference on your payment. I mean, should they maybe increase amortization and that sort of stuff? Maybe.
Yeah, it sounds like first-time homebuyers are getting a lot of gifts right now. So we'll
see. The 30-year AM that just...
The 30-year AM and then the PTT exemption increase. So a few things that might move the needle a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. I went to the Vancouver Real Estate Forum and I'm trying to remember the point that was made where, you know, they were talking about, you know, a lot of the time, say the Bank of Canada and Canadian policy follows kind of American policy.
Right.
And, you know, the rates and kind of where those rates sit. But it was interesting, the economists were saying that, you know, they could actually, if, you know, with their studies, Canada doesn't need to be, you know, at the same.
Right.
level as the U.S. because the U.S.'s economy can handle they can handle that interest rate.
Right.
Because their economy is stronger.
Yeah. And they have the 30-year mortgage. They have the rate, the terms, right? So yeah. It's like, we'll feel it a lot quicker and a lot harsher.
And ours is just 5 years.
Yeah.
So.
Or variable.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So on average, it's 5 years terms. So those are like the topics, like, you know, we could actually be a percent lower and it would still work because our economy is different. But again, depends on how they're looking, the economists are, you know, governance is happening and how they want to follow that rate, but really, truly, they don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can be a little, it could be a gap.
We just had an economist from Moody's
Brendan Lacerda,
on the program yesterday, and he was saying that there can be 100 bips, basically, is the divergence.
That's what I was listening to. Yeah.
Which, I mean, hey,
ring-a-ding-ding, let's go.
We have this segment called the Five Wires, Sonny. Five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Sure.
Okay, question number one is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
Oh, yeah. The real estate book.
Was this the licensing book?
Licensing book, yes.
Yeah. That's not a good bedtime reading.
In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
My wife keeping an eye on my drinking.
Yeah. Question number three. What have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
Good question. But again, I don't watch TV. It's just never have time.
Man, busy life.
Busy life, yeah. Oppenheimer. Was it Oppenheimer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great
question. Yeah, I still want to see that. That's
you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, it's good. Favorite band or music?
Oh, House.
Oh, okay.
And last but not least, something that you have purchased for under $1,500 recently that's had a positive impact on your life.
Oh, that massage gun.
The Theragun. Yes.
Theragun, I got one too.
Yeah, my wife's got one. I'm not allowed to use it, but eventually. Might have to get my own.
It's great for, massage.
Yeah. As a final question, we've talked about it before we went live. Dimex, where does the name come from?
So it's interesting. I was going to start an import company, import export. So it was D for Dylan. And then IM was import and export. And so I didn't end up doing that. And I got into development. And I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, I'm doing development now. So now it's going to be, you know, Dylan Investment Management Excellence. So
it works.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I don't get asked that question quite often. So I'm actually sharing it on your show. So.
Yeah. Dimex. And
knows that.
And how can people find out more about what you guys are up to? And you're selling a couple projects right now.
Yes. They can visit our website at dimexgroup.com. And then from there, you know, they can go off to the other websites as well. We've got links and yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks for taking the time today, Sonny.
Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. That was our discussion with Sonny Dylan from Dimex Group.
Really enjoyed having Sonny on the program. Always great kind of to get that more kind of long durée history of real estate in Vancouver.
Look it up.
It's not quite long durée because it's not hundreds of years.
That was a French historiographical movement that you're discussing. I'm not sure everybody gets the reference.
Oh, come on.
Everybody knows the long durée, right, Corey?
Do you know the long durée, Corey?
I have no comment at this point.
if it's not a Nickelback lyric. Okay, anyway, so what else do we got for today? One thing I want to mention is, man, there's one game left in this Oilers series. Man, the Oilers are getting smacked.
Oh, they're getting, yeah. It's not great.
You know what was funny last night? The highlight I was telling, well, Matt, you were over last night, but I was telling Sabrina when I woke up this morning, the third period, my father-in-law and I are talking and it's a tie game. There's about 7 minutes left. And out of the corner of my eyes, I see the Oilers score. And so does my father-in-law. And we like jump up and chest bump and we're super excited.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
It was a replay. And everyone's like, what are you doing?
I know you guys were like, yes! High-fiving. You like threw popcorn everywhere. It's like, that happened like 20 minutes ago, man.
I've never seen someone so excited to pull the goalie before. Yeah. Hey, the goalie's up.
Anyways, what else do we have before?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer where you get stats, different types of stats, sales ratios. You can see what's happening in your neighborhood, in your price point. Really interesting stats. We got VIP access to pre-sales. We got deal of the month. There's no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. We also, of course, have
private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still with the rest of us. Power walk by, you get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. There's no reason that you shouldn't be monitoring the market right now.
It's an exciting time to monitor the market.
And PCS is the best way. Get your own portal with listing updates right there.
Absolutely.
I think that is it. Corey, you got anything else you want to talk about? You're just shaking your head.
I said it last time. I'm just so impressed that you say that every single time about the last part. I thought you pre-recorded that.
I'm trying to get faster. I want to be like, do you remember the Micro Machine guy? That's what I'm going for.
Now that's a reference.
Everyone that would get if they're over 40.
I'm just impressed hanging out with you guys, how professional you guys are and how amateur I am when I do my show. So it's great.
That's coming up next. Matt, how can people get in touch?
They can get in touch at any time, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. And I can't wait for next week. I think we're going live with Clint Murphy. Ooh. is back. And honestly, that was an hour and 15 minutes of mind-blowing content,
yeah,
and a conversation really that I think is going to be game-changing for some of our listeners.
Absolutely. So tune in next week.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.